This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
It's been a lot of new testimony coming out, new evidence coming out, expert witnesses saying some, depending how you take it, pretty damning things or things that raise more questions. Again, it's the two sides of this case that take every piece and go, this is great for me. This is, I mean, okay, I guess you can kind of, maybe, sort of, I don't know. Depending on how you want to spin it. Joining me to discuss all the latest in the trial of Karen Reed, Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor. There's been a lot. Just had Dr. Asik Wolf testifying the other day. He's the neurosurgeon who just reminded me so much of on Seinfeld, Dr. or Investigator Bookman. From the library. We're just very much, yeah. What do you think about that, Jerry? But very, like, knows his stuff. I wouldn't question Dr. Bookman, and I wouldn't question Dr. Asik Wolf, who testified. Eric, from a legal strategy perspective here, how does a defense team leverage this expert testimony when the prosecution thinks it's pretty strong? I mean, he basically said the injury to John O'Keefe's head came from falling on the back of his head, not from a strike in the front, not from a hammer, not from a fist, not from anything, but falling back on his head. What are your thoughts?
You know, that's going to be a tough one for defense to navigate because, as you know, their general theory is that John O'Keefe went into the house, there was some physical altercation, he was killed and then or injured and then brought outside in the front of the house. And so, you know, could the defense argue that, hey, there's that gash on John O'Keefe's eye, maybe he was hit in the front and that caused him to hit his head, and then he became unconscious, and they carried him out into the front yard, these cops who did this to another cop. But you can see that sort of gets attenuated and a little bit incredulous as we sort of go down that road.
A little ridiculous as it keeps going on. Yeah, I mean, I've seen the reactions from some of the FKR folks, and they immediately go to, well, the basement has a hard concrete floor. Okay. Sure, but there's no evidence pointing to him ever getting in the house, including Karen, in her own words, saying, you know, well, later she says she saw him get into the house. But initially, for the first however many weeks of this thing, there was none of that. And she found him where she thought she left him. So there's that. They can easily scream, conspiracy! That's how it is. They're covering it all up. And I guess so that's one could try to explain that, but that doesn't work in a courtroom very well. Just screaming conspiracy, everything is shady. I mean, or does it work in a courtroom?
It depends on the case, depends on the jury. But one thing as a prosecutor, when those sorts of claims would be made by defense, sometimes I would just sort of draw out all of the events that would have to occur in terms of proving that conspiracy and how implausible they were, and just say, hey, either Karen Reed is the unluckiest person in the world who is being framed and there was this massive conspiracy with all of these events that had to transpire. She did. And you know, jury, what appears to be most plausible, what appears to be the simple common sense interpretation of this evidence? And I think we're going in the direction of a conviction.
Yeah, it certainly feels that way. I mean, if you believe the experts, or if you just kind of cherry pick which ones you want to say are valid, which seems to be, you know, it happens in every case. You have the battle of the experts on both sides. Well, this one seems to say this, and I completely don't believe that one. Really, for not a lot of great reasons half the time. What did you think this week when the arguments came up about, who was it, Shannon Burgess, the individual who had the timestamp data? He figured out a way to get deeper, and he very well explained it. It was boring as hell, but he very well explained how he got into the data of the Lexus and the SD card he had to find and all this stuff to pull the data to get to where he got to line the timestamps up, which just happened to look like they line up with a vehicle strike, where the vehicle says it struck something and John O'Keefe's phone stopped moving. Pretty damning. Let's talk about the actual evidence first versus the rebuttal. What do you think about those pieces?
You know, on direct examination, I really think the prosecution kind of stepped their game up in this second trial here. This is a creative, next level sort of meta-analysis between multiple electronic systems to sync up the fact that, according to the prosecution, John O'Keefe's phone, which prosecution says was outside the house, stopped having interactions with it at pretty much the exact same time that Karen Reed's vehicle was in reverse and then, you know, left the scene. You know, that pretty clearly shows that there was a vehicle strike, according to the prosecution. And I thought it was clever and compelling, at least on direct.
Clever and compelling, yes. It's, I guess, the question, and I'm sure they're going to try and raise this with the defense of, you know, well, why did this get in? They've already tried to argue, why did this get in so late? But are they going to try and go with the credibility of it? They're trying to go with the credibility of the guy, of Shannon Burgess, who delivered it, by going after his resume, where he had talked about getting a bachelor's degree. He didn't quite get the bachelor's degree. This was on his LinkedIn, and I think it was on the website, on his bio. I mean, it's not a great look. That's a T that should have been crossed and an I that should have been dotted. But we're talking about his expertise in this being certifications that really have nothing to do with his bachelor degree. This had all of his certifications that he laid out very much are in line with what you would need to come to the conclusion or to be a credible witness, expert witness, for what he is talking about here. It's a lot of noise, but is any of that going to stick with a jury? Do you think that his credibility, how successful do you think the defense was at trying to cut up his credibility, considering they didn't talk anything about the actual evidence?
You know, sometimes when you're in that gauntlet and the analysis seems pretty sound, but there's, you know, this little gift that the prosecution gives you regarding Burgess's background and his misrepresentations, you got to pounce on that. And you got to try to, you know, capitalize on that and convey to this jury, gosh, this guy lied about having this bachelor's degree. Talking about an expert who has to be qualified. That's at least part of his qualifications that he's just lying to you about, jury. And so, you know, that is, I think defense made the most of it that they could, but there wasn't a very solid challenge to the science of the opinion in my prison.
Let's say, and this is just a theoretical here, had they not found that hiccup on his resume, what would they have gone after? I mean, what would they have? I mean, they definitely were struggling to find something. And then that one just kind of came to them. Here's what you should say. Here's what you should do. It was a, you know, just a golden ticket right there. But if that wasn't there, how did they counter something like that?
You know, my understanding is that there was some possible variance in sort of the numbers and the timestamps or whatever. But I think the prosecution did a pretty good job of kind of explaining the thrust of the testimony and why it matters. Absent that, blunder regarding Burgess's background, this would have been a pretty unassailable witness, I think.
Just the idea that there's a vehicle strike registering on her car in the relative same area where John O'Keefe's phone stopped working. I mean, we're talking minutes here. I mean, they got this down to like seconds now, but even within minutes, I think it would seem pretty reasonable to a juror to go, well, yeah, clocks can be off, but this thing registered a strike right around the same time his phone stopped working. I mean, unless he ran into the house and got beat up there in the course of 2 minutes and 30 seconds and was dragged back out and Karen still happened to be there. I mean, none of it makes sense. None of it would actually work for the house timeline and the whole fight theory, would it?
Not in my opinion. And really, the prosecution is doing a good job of shoring up any possible openings that the defense could try to exploit in terms of reasonable doubt. But by this, you know, precise and high-level technological analysis that is hard to argue with. It's based on data. You know, we're talking about when a phone says it was last used and what a car says in terms of backing in or in terms of reversing. And those things seem to line up precisely with the prosecution's theory that this was a vehicle strike. And it's really starting to dry up any grounds that the defense could try to assert in terms of closing argument, or in closing argument. That's partly why the defense was so obstinate that they did not want this evidence in at this late time in the trial, because they knew it would be centrally damaging to their theory.
It is certainly centrally damaging, again, depending on how the jury takes it.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.